Welcome to the ASHP Official Podcast, your guide to issues related to medication use, public health, and the profession of pharmacy.
Thanks for joining us for ASHP's podcast, Insights. This series celebrates experiences and perspectives of ASHP's diverse membership and examines the leadership and practice journeys of our members, and also explores how to integrate considerations for diversity, equity, and inclusion into their pharmacy practice. My name is Eric Marajka, Senior Director, Practice Advancement and Policy Development at ASHP, and I'll be your host today. March is Women's History Month, and we celebrate the vital contributions women have made to our profession and recognize the specific achievements women have made over the course of American history. I'll be speaking with Rear Admiral retired Pam Schweitzer, former Chief Professional Officer and Assistant Surgeon General, U.S. Public Health Service, Captain Kaylee Fretlin, Principal Pharmacy Consultant, Office of Clinical and Preventive Service, Indian Health Service Headquarters, and Lieutenant Colonel Maggie Felix, U.S. Army Reserves, and Health System Pharmacy Administration and Leadership Resident at UK Healthcare, Lexington, Kentucky. I'll be talking with them about their personal experiences and perspectives on opportunities for women in leadership. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. I'm going to start out with a question that we normally ask all of you in these types of formats, and it's tell us a little bit about yourself, and let's start out with Pam.
Okay, thank you, Eric, and I want to thank both Eric and ASHP really for just organizing this podcast, and we appreciate that you're celebrating women's contributions to the profession and their achievements. And I can say on behalf of the three of us here today that we are just really honored to represent Federal Pharmacy women that serve our country. So thank you very much. So a little bit about myself, you know, as mentioned previously, my former title, I was a 10th Chief Pharmacist Officer. I spent about 29 years in federal service. I was 24 years as a U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps Officer. And then I was 5 years in the VA. So I actually went in two federal services. My pharmacy degree is at UCSF, UC San Francisco, and I first went in to the Indian Health Service after I completed a residency at UC Irvine Medical Center, and my residency was in ambulatory care slash administration. I didn't realize I'd be an administrator when I was in it, but that's what the title of it was. I grew up doing a lot of service work. I was with a family. My dad had served in the Army. I grew up in a family that was very involved in the community and very service oriented. I was super involved in 4-H, you know, did a lot of things with church. And then later when I became a pharmacist, I was involved, you know, residents or whatever. I was doing work with Flying Samaritans. So that was really fun. Currently, I have been married for 37 years to my husband, Paul. We have 2 children and 3 grandchildren. And I will mention that a lot of my leadership training that I had was really from the VA. During those years I was in the VA, they pretty much put me through lots of training. So I really appreciate that. And I'm always indebted to the VA for just really putting me on this leadership path. But prior to pharmacy school, prior to even going to pharmacy school, I had actually been taken the Dale Carnegie program. You know, it was 10 weeks or however long it was. And I had went through that. And that actually influenced me quite a bit too. One thing I've learned, it's been a whole career of just constant training, 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 training. I even later on in my career went and took part in the Executive Masters of Health Administration, you know, a couple year program of that too. So it's been a whole career of training, and I still am continually learning and obtaining certificates and working on things too.
Pam, great. That's great. I did not know your dad was in the Army. So hooah on that one. Kaylee.
Thanks, Eric. So I actually started my career with United States Public Health Service back in 2007. I knew in high school I wanted to work in the Indian Health Service as I grew up with Indian Health Service as my healthcare. So I was a patient in Indian Health Service all through my childhood and actually still into my adult life. So during my undergraduate years, I had the opportunity to work during my summers at two different Indian Health Service pharmacies close to my hometown. And during this experience, working with public health service pharmacists really solidified my goal to become both a pharmacist and a USPHS officer with Indian Health Service. So after I graduated from pharmacy school, my doctor of pharmacy, I completed a PGY1 residency and then applied to the United States Public Health Service in a position with Indian Health Service. So this really began my journey as an officer over 16 years ago. And we know pharmacy is a lifelong learning profession. I sought out my board certification, numerous trainings, very similar to what Pam had discussed, and am now in my final semester to complete my master's degree in healthcare service administration. Throughout my IHS career, I've served as a clinical pharmacist, a pharmacy director, a residency program director, and now I serve as our principal pharmacy consultant for Indian Health Service. And in this role, I'm responsible for agency-wide pharmacy policies, supporting our federal pharmacy programs, serving as a pharmacy subject matter expert for the agency. And my favorite part of my job is I get to be able to share the accomplishments of our pharmacists, our pharmacy technicians, and our pharmacies, and advocate for them, for both our patients within our agency.
Thanks, Kaylee. You know, I had firsthand look and experience with some IHS pharmacists back when I was in pharmacy school at Blackfeet Community Hospital. So I was very impressed and they left a lasting impression on me. So thank you, Maggie.
Thank you, Eric. Again, thank you for this opportunity. So I went to the University of Washington for School of Pharmacy and graduated in 2007 with my PharmD and then entered the workforce. I actually worked at Bartell Drugs, a local chain out there, for about 5 years. At that point, I was looking for adventure and I was looking for change. I do not come from a military family directly, but my grandfather did serve in World War II as a bomber. I had a pharmacy friend who I had met through actually APHA, and he graduated a year after me in 2008, but had gone directly into service. And we had kept in touch over those years. And it's really interesting how, you know, one moment in time or one friendship can change the entire course of your life. So I decided to join. I applied. I boarded. And as you know, Eric, it's a board and selection process. So I was selected for active duty in 2012 and spent almost 4 years on active duty, including being stationed at Fort Knox for a couple of years and then a year at the 121st Combat Support Hospital, or CASH, in Seoul, Korea. I've been in the reserves for 8 years now, so a total of 12 years of federal service. The reserves have given me such great opportunities. I've been a company commander. Recently, I was the U.S. Central Command or U.S. CENTCOM pharmacy consultant. In that role, I was responsible for all pharmacy operations for all military services in the Middle East during the COVID vaccine launch. That was fun. Currently, I'm assigned to 3rd Med out of Atlanta, and recently I was selected for battalion command, so I will take up command in summer of the 326th Combat Operational Stress Detachment. This is a unit which the entire intent or purpose is to ensure resiliency of our service members and be a resource to our service members and our commanders for behavioral health, and I'm really excited for this opportunity to lead this team and learn from them. In my civilian capacity, as mentioned, I am in my second year of a Health Systems Pharmacy Administration and Leadership Residency, and I have done this to further my non-military health systems knowledge and expertise, so I basically can be the best pharmacist that I can be and serve those that I lead.
Wow. Impressive, all of you. That's a great well-being and resiliency kind of priority of ASHP, too. So to be a battalion commander of that unit, best of luck to you with that. I know you'll succeed. Woven into the fabric of all your careers is really service. Now, pharmacy, specifically pharmacy leadership, was that something that you were always interested in? And Kaylee, let's start with you.
So, Eric, I became interested, kind of actually like Maggie. It was that point in time, just you cross paths with someone. But I became interested in pharmacy during my undergraduate years. I mentioned earlier that I had some experience working in Indian Health Service during that time. But before that, so my mom was a nurse and still a nurse with our tribe back home. And I knew from a young age I wanted to be in healthcare. I knew that nursing wasn't the career path for me, though. But I had a friend who I ran into that first year of undergrad who was talking about what she wanted to do and her goals, and she mentioned pharmacy. I hadn't even thought about pharmacy, but it really sounded like a perfect healthcare profession for me. Less body fluids than nursing and less school than a medical provider. So that opened up that door to the pharmacy, and I walked right into that and all the opportunities that came with it. As for leadership roles, I think looking back over the course of my life, you know, whether it was in high school, into college, I feel like I've always stepped into different leadership roles. But it wasn't because I had a burning desire to be a leader or step into leadership roles. It was oftentimes because someone asked me to step into a role, or there wasn't someone to fill a critical role and I felt obligated to step up. So I guess if I sum that up, most of my leadership roles happened because I stepped in when there was a gap or there was a need, and if I was asked, because I don't necessarily think I ever saw myself as a leader, but I saw myself as someone who would be able to step up and into roles. And what happened during, well, as I've been in IHS, that really actually opened up almost all the leadership roles I've had. And one of the most recent ones happened during COVID-19. So COVID-19, when the pandemic hit, I was the pharmacy chief, and we needed to implement our incident command within our hospital. I became the logistics officer, and that role actually led to being asked to become one of our deputy co-leads for Indian Health Services Vaccine Task Force, which led the COVID-19 vaccine implementation and rollout across 37 states for over 2 million American Indian Alaska Native patients. And that door then opened up the opportunity to be where I'm at today, which is the principal pharmacy consultant for Indian Health Service. And so I think, I wouldn't say I fell into leadership, but it was really stepping up when I was asked to, identifying those gaps and having a willingness to step into those roles.
Thank you. Maggie, how about yourself?
You know, it's interesting, Kaylee, that you frame it that way, because I always say I've always been a reluctant leader. I can be extremely introverted at times, especially when I was younger. Although, if I'm being honest, I've always been interested in leadership, not necessarily the lead, but because I thrive on challenges and I love studying human interactions and human psychology. That love started, you know, way back when I was in early school. And pharmacy, I really became interested in almost back in high school as well. If it weren't for my 10th grade chemistry teacher, Mrs. Stevens, at West High School in Alaska, I don't know that I would have found my love of chemistry and science. So thank you to all our educators, because she changed the course of my life as well. Entering the pharmacy workforce, I kind of lost touch with organizations and my desire to lead, which is what partly inspired me to join the military. You know, as an introvert, and especially as females, I'm sure the other ladies can understand, in the beginning, I questioned my ability to lead. We've all been part of great organizations and some not so great ones. Often, but not always, this stems from the leader. The leader sets the tone and the leader sets the culture. And military service, like Kaylee spoke to, you know, situational opportunities just provided such a spectrum of opportunity and growth for me. It went from, can I lead? To, okay, let's try this. I think I can lead. To, oh my goodness, I led. But that didn't happen in a vacuum. Leaders aren't born, they're raised. It takes a village. And I would not have been able to do that without the mentors, the support, my senior enlisted advisors, my colleagues. And now it's come full circle, and I have subordinates and direct reports that are answering the call to lead and taking their own positions, and seeing them succeed is really, really gratifying and rewarding.
Thanks, Maggie. And Pam, we'll finish up this question with you. Let's hear from you about pharmacy leadership.
Yeah, so you're going to see a theme here, Eric, between Kaylee and Maggie, because when I initially was a pharmacist, I wanted to be a clinical pharmacist. There was no way I was going to be a pharmacy administrator or pharmacy director. I was all in on the clinical pharmacy. But what happened was the same thing happened early on. I mean, I was only 2 years out of school, and I was at the VA, and I wouldn't say that I was asked. I was really say I was pushed a little bit to be the pharmacy director during this crazy time. And, you know, I was reluctant, same as Maggie, same reluctant to get into there. So that was my first little taste of being a pharmacy director. But during that time, I was able to actually turn the department around in a short period of time, even though I didn't want the position. And so I just kind of plant that little seed there. I'm like, okay. Later on, when I actually was the pharmacy director, the reason why I was in a different position in the Indian Health Service, I actually wanted to do that really mainly. The reason why I did it was because I had an ulterior motive. I wanted to influence the expansion of clinical services. And in that role, I knew I could help do that. And during that time, you know, we weren't given any extra money for FTEs, for positions, for pharmacist positions or technician positions, but they said you can have funding for automation. And so I sort of went down that path. All right, we can have funding for automation. Let's get automation. So I went down that path. So every single of these decisions that came along, something happened that caused me to go down there. And I could see how that all came together. And I really liked working with the other disciplines. I liked working with the administration. I understood what they were doing. I got along with the other department heads. So I sort of kind of fell into it over a period of time. But I will mention, I was not always a pharmacy director. After that first experience of it, you know, I had little children and I realized how much time it took, and I would be taking work home and I'd be working. I couldn't turn my brain off from all of that. And what I would end up doing, I ended up taking and stepping down and getting a staff position. But I did that, and it was the best thing I could have ever done. It was just great for my family, for my husband, for my children, because I was able to be present, you know, with them. And then I'd pop back into another leadership role at some point. And it helped me just getting that different perspective of being a leader, then being a staff position, then going back and being a leader. I did that like two or three times. And every time it energized me to be back in that leadership role, because I really had a better perspective of what was going on with the staff when I was in those roles, and just how to motivate and maybe inspire people to, and how to drive change.
That seems to be a common theme too, the reluctant leader. So I appreciate your perspectives there. Well, and some of this you've probably touched upon already in the first two questions that were kind of posed to you, but want to ask, start with Maggie, some life lessons you may have learned from either mentors or experience or both. And how does your time in federal service affect the way you relate to others in the larger community?
Sure, Eric. So military service definitely affects how I interact with others in the community. If I encounter a veteran, for example, I take the effort to hear and learn their story. And it's often intriguing and fascinating. And it teaches that ability to connect, especially as an introvert, that is applicable to coworker relationships, to patient relationships. Although I do live in two different worlds, you know, I have one foot in the civilian world and I have one foot in the military world. And leading is different in those two worlds. And it's a constant exercise in code switching to navigate the similarities and the differences between those two worlds. And I always say I'll continue as long as I can contribute and as long as I can learn. So three of the most important lessons I've learned is lesson number one, perfection is a myth. No one is perfect. Everyone makes mistakes. And pharmacists, as we well know, tend to be a little type A, a little perfectionist for good reason, right? Safety and patient care. But I think we can get better at failing where we can, as failure teaches more than success. I always say, fail small, win big. Lesson number two, influence rather than direct authority is the most challenging, but the most effective form of leadership. Building relationships, putting the mission first, putting ego aside, those are imperative. And finally, lesson three, and what I think is probably the most important lesson, leadership is caring about and serving those you lead. My favorite quote is from General Colin Powell, and it is applicable to the non-military world as well. General Powell said, "Leadership is solving problems. The day soldiers stop bringing you their problems is the day you have stopped leading them. They have either lost confidence that you can help or concluded you do not care. Either case is a failure of leadership." Wise words from General Powell.
Thanks, Maggie. I had the opportunity to have his book signed just shortly before he passed, unfortunately. Let's go with Pam with this question. You've provided quite a bit already on your life lessons, but I'm sure you have many more to share with your mentors and experience.
Yeah, thanks for that question. And you're going to find a similarity between all of us. It's kind of interesting. So I sort of did answering this in an order. I had a mentor that emphasized this to me and told this to me from day one. And I didn't understand it right away. And then later on in my career, it clicked. And what that is mission first. And you have to understand what is mission first. And it really took me half my career to really figure out what and have it sink in what it meant. And it has to do with understanding what my organization is about, what their priorities are. And the reason why I say that is because any projects, anything that we're working on needs to be tied to the mission and the priorities. So for instance, right now, the current Surgeon General, the priorities are social connection, youth mental health, workplace wellness, health misinformation, worker burnout. So any efforts that fall along that, any efforts are tied to that, that's where funding comes in. There's going to be funding. You're going to get resources that are tied to those things. So I learned early on to tie, if it resonated with me personally, where I could be passionate about it, I would tie into some of those priorities. And then another one was picking your boss. I think that that's one of the most important things we can do is, number one, pick a good boss or be a good boss to other people. And I'll just give you an example. And this impacted me as a female and as a mother early on in my career. I was working with people that were didn't have kids or they weren't engaged with their kids like my husband and I kind of had wanted to be, where, you know, you have all their activities and things you wanted to do. So every time I asked for time off, they would let me have it, but it was sort of not making me feel, you know, I had to be kind of like, you know, not embarrassed, but just challenged by it. It was like, okay, you know, yes, you can. It was not like a very positive thing. So when I became a boss, I decided that I was going to make sure people felt that their family was important. If I heard that they missed an activity that was really important to their family, you know, whether it be a reunion, whether their child performing in a play or something like that, they were going to be in big trouble by me. I mean, we need to get our work done. That's important. But we also need to take care of our employees and not make them feel like it's a bad thing to be with your family. And I'm just using that as an example. There's a zillion of them about being a good boss and understanding and being helping them to grow and be better people and helping them to succeed if they go somewhere else. We want to help grow our employees. So I think getting a good boss is like really, really important. That was a life lesson too. And the other thing I'll just mention, when you are in these leadership, and I haven't had a chance to ask either, I'd be interested in hearing what Kaylee and Maggie say too, is it can be lonely sometimes when you're at the top spot and you need to have a really good support system, either people outside the system that you can really bounce things by, talk to, and just a really good people that understand you and know you that could help support you. So anyway, those are a couple of things I thought I'd mention.
That was actually helpful for me. I was taking some notes. So appreciate that. And Kaylee, how about yourself?
Well, man, I think it's fun to be the last one to give this one because, one, I can comment on both Maggie and Pam's responses. But man, are those so accurate. And Pam, your last one about it being kind of lonely sometimes being in leadership roles and finding those folks who you trust, who you can share things. It's so important that we have those trusted advisors to be able to help us walk through this leadership journey as well. We need mentors. We're never too old for a mentor. To have those people that can help provide us that. So when I think back to some of the lessons, both that have helped me professionally and personally, but the first one was earlier in my career, someone told me to bloom where you're planted. And I always took this to mean to give your best wherever you are. So many times, both personally and professionally, we can't control the circumstances or events that happened, but we can control our attitude, our effort, how we respond and how we show up. So I think this is so vital. We saw this firsthand during COVID, during other epidemics, crises, you know, whether we have enough resources to do the jobs that we do. There's so many things sometimes out of our control, but how we respond to that is so important. And that has helped me so much within my career of knowing what I can control, which is a lot of times myself and how I respond to situations. My second one is, I think I mentioned this earlier, but really is to say yes. My biggest challenges and growth happened when I said yes to those most difficult asks, reluctantly sometimes. I didn't feel pretty. I didn't feel prepared, but I had to figure it out and I had to learn. And even the experiences that, still looking back, I can say maybe I didn't like as much, I still grew. And they were experiences I'm actually really grateful to have now because I use them. They were frustrating, but they've opened some opportunities, but they're really tools in your tool belt. So every experience you have is a tool in that tool belt that you're going to just add and you're going to be able to use later on in life, or you're going to be able to help someone else maybe if they've gone through that same experience or are going to go through it. And lastly, this one came a little bit later, but happened really as a clinical pharmacist, and that was meeting people where they are and understanding how to meet patients where they are, people where they are. I think we've heard that a lot more, but 10 years ago when I first heard that, I didn't really understand what that meant. But I have used this so much. And it's not the locality, right? It's not. It's, you know, if I was working with patients or colleagues or mentees, this is really a reminder to myself that we all have different experiences. We all have different perceptions, different expectations. And I need to understand and hear where someone else is, what they want, instead of assuming I know what's best for them, taking off my expert hat and being a friend, being a coach, being a mentor, and not being the expert who has all the answers, but being that resource for that person. And so I think that this is applicable no matter where we are within our careers, if we're a leader or not. You can always have the opportunity to meet people where they are.
Thanks to all three of you on that question. I think well done. Next question I have is going to be for Pam and Kaylee. There are actually two questions. What opportunities and challenges are facing leaders today? And what are some major considerations in pursuit of opportunity and overcoming barriers specifically for women in leadership? And we'll start with Pam.
This is a great question. This is one of those things where it's fun to sit around and be strategic about this and think about this. And I was thinking back on this question. And by the way, before I say that, Kaylee, I just want to say bloom where you're planted. When I was in 4-H, remember, I'm really involved back in the day. That was one of the themes one year for the women doing the sewing, bloom where you're planted. So it's kind of, it brought me back to those years in 4-H. So anyway, back to this question though, you know, one of the big areas is burnout, workforce burnout. You know, and I actually think it's really hard. And I watch in lots of the industries, watching people try to balance pharmacy and the career. People don't have time to do all these extra things. I sit and watch some of the younger people watching. They just don't have time. It's not enough time in the day to fit everything in. So I just think one of the things to do is really a little bit more strategic is to come up with ways. And we did this back in the early days. This is bringing back the how old I am here, back when we were having challenges recruiting pharmacists, when there was a big shortage of pharmacists, we did the same things. And we were looking, and the VA did this. And I know the Indian Health Service both did this, is how can we make the job better so that we get more people coming into this field? How can we make the job better? And I know there's a lot of challenges to doing that. And it's really going to be a strategic, at the high level strategic. And you probably look around, and I'm sure that the military has the same thing. You look around and find where there's pockets, people have figured this out. And we did a lot of that, looking at the pockets of what people had figured out. How were they doing it? Why is there not turnover here? What's different about these places? And almost thinking strategically on this, that's one of them. And then the other thing for women, I think we need to do a much better job of supporting each other. And this is more from my watching a career of watching and seeing how men support each other really well. And women need to do the same thing, especially women in leadership positions. We need to do a better job of supporting each other. And this could even be in all ways. When you have a woman leader, finding what women need to be able to support each other in meetings, support each other. You know, great idea. Kaylee, that's a great idea. Maggie, that's a great idea. I think we should move forward on that. Just that reinforcement. And that comes from a little bit of sports too, learning about that positive reinforcement can kind of keep you going and keeping you give creative and out of the box ideas. So I think that part there is really important too. And then the other thing that women can do is really shift a little bit more, instead of being so operational, being strategic. I'm really fortunate that now that I'm retired, I actually do way more reading now, and I actually have time to ponder and think and be more strategic. And like, even if this is kind of a plug for ASHP here, the recent forecast that just came out, it's going through that process, and it's this report looking at emerging issues. And it really serves as a tool to help pharmacy departments plan, for health systems to plan. And it's these strategic recommendations for practice leaders. It's an honor for me to even be part of it. And I just think reading it and starting to be more that way, I think is really helpful for women.
Thank you. Kaylee, items to add to that?
Yeah, I love listening to Pam's words of wisdom here. I'm taking my own notes on this, Eric, as well, of things to take with me after this. And she's absolutely right. So starting off with the burnout piece, I think the last several years, we have definitely seen the challenges and what's happened with burnout. I think the trajectory of folks leaving the profession or shortage of pharmacists, we've been through this cycle before where we've had a shortage of pharmacists. And I think it's important to really understand, what did we do before? And some of those lessons learned, you know, it was a while back. And so it's easy to sometimes forget that those resources are out there and what we did, and to learn from that, I think in the past is really important. But I want to speak to the last few years. I think one of the things we do have to recognize is that there has been a lot of opportunities as well. And we know that there's challenges, burnout being one of them, but there also was a lot of opportunities that happened in the last few years that opened up doors for pharmacy. We had the opportunity as a profession across the nation to demonstrate how versatile pharmacy was, our pharmacists, our pharmacy technicians. We served in multiple positions in different roles, traditional, non-traditional, administrative, outside of the pharmacy. So stepping in up in that way during a crisis really did give us the confidence. And I think that that's something that we need to continue to work and foster on, especially for our women in pharmacy, is that confidence that we can do hard things, even if they're new. We're worried about failing. It's not going to be perfect, like Maggie mentioned. The other thing I feel like is that we were brought together by that common goal. And I think this goes back to understanding when Pam talked about understanding the mission and being mission focused. We had a common goal and a purpose. And man, what we got done when we all worked towards that common goal and purpose was outstanding. And so I think, you know, we recognize that we shared resources, we supported each other during that time, and we knew we were making a difference. And then the pandemic ended and we had a lot of burnout. We had people leaving the profession. And I think we forgot that we need to continue to build on things that we, those successes, and being strategic about those. We know what we can do now, right? We've got the confidence. We know what we were able to do, and we can take that and help us move forward. But as leaders in our profession, one of the things, as I was thinking about this question and how we establish kind of that community of support to raise each other up, especially as women in pharmacy. And one of the things I think is really important as we support each other is that we need to be willing to share our stories with each other. So I work with American Indian Alaska Natives. I am a descendant, American Indian descendant, and there is so much healing and power in sharing stories, in a sense of belonging when we do share those stories and experiences. And I think that's really important for us to build in as leaders, as a profession, that we need to be able to share stories and our willingness to hear people's stories and let them have a safe place to share stories and experiences so that we can all heal together. Because I think there is some healing that needs to happen. But then there's also a sense of belonging that comes with that when we do share our stories. The other wonderful thing that happens when we do share stories and even a platform like this is we remember why we're doing what we're doing and that sense of purpose, like our own personal sense of purpose. Why did we get into pharmacy? Being able to share this story and hear Pam and Maggie's reasons of why they got into pharmacy is very inspiring. And it's inspiring to me as a female or as a woman in pharmacy. And I know it's inspiring to others, and it's going to inspire students. It's going to inspire that next generation to come into the pharmacy workforce. And I think these are things that we can take forward as we move into the future and be strategic about them, but also help us learn and continue to grow and come together as women in pharmacy.
Thank you both for that. We're reaching, you know, sort of the end. And I have two more questions for all of you. And first of which, and Kaylee, I'll continue asking you to start. What advice do you have for someone who would be interested in exploring a career in federal pharmacy or just in federal service?
So I'll keep this short, Eric. Federal pharmacy is the opportunity to serve patients. It's the opportunity to serve our communities, and it's the opportunity to serve our nation. The opportunities for pharmacists in federal service is endless. There's traditional, clinical, non-traditional, administrative type of roles. And I think what's really exciting about federal pharmacy is that it is mission focused. That is our mission. That's our purpose, is to serve. There is no other purpose. And so I think having that sense of mission and purpose in what we do really makes federal pharmacy an amazing place to practice as a pharmacist.
Thanks. Maggie, how about yourself?
You know, I find it interesting, Kaylee mentioned your purpose, and I think that's important, right? I think the first thing for anyone interested in this type of service is you need to find your why. What's your purpose? And that why might change over time, and that's perfectly acceptable. My why has changed continuously, but when the times get rough and we're focused on that mission and it gets hard, you're going to need to come back to your why. So I think finding your why is probably the first task. Other than that, speak to different members. You know, the services, we all have different cultures. The Army is different than the Navy, and the Navy is different than the Air Force. And we often joke about that. We're different parts of a big family. So I'd recommend speaking to a service member. As Kaylee mentioned, the diversity of opportunities. We also have civilian pharmacists within our military treatment facilities, both in the US and overseas. And I know plenty of friends who have gone into federal service as a civilian pharmacist. As I've spoken to over this time, you know, military service has profoundly shaped me both professionally and personally, and I've had unparalleled opportunities and experiences. You know, I've done hand-to-hand combat class, level one combatives. That was really fun, and I'm never bored. But I think for me, the true highlight has been my battle buddies. It's been those Army friendships, that support system that Pam mentioned. You know, those Army friendships have been some of the most rewarding, supportive, dependable connections I've ever had. And one final point, which I would make, which is distinct, is that reserve service is different. It's distinctly different than active duty. You know, 2/3 of our combat support services, including medical, are in the Army Reserves. And our citizen soldiers hold down two jobs, their civilian job and their military job. And often the military is a labor love sacrifice. And so it's difficult sometimes for employers to navigate that. But I think the return on investment of employing a reservist is invaluable with the skills, expertise, and leadership they bring.
Thanks, Maggie. Appreciate that perspective. And Pam.
So anyway, they both hit the nail on the head, both of you, Maggie and Kaylee. So I'll add just from a little bit different perspective. And I agree that you were spot on about working in federal service. It's about service. I'll talk a little bit more just about how people get connected in with this, because if you can find someone that's in federal service, that's really ideal, whether it be in the military, whether it be, you know, one of the armed forces, a pharmacist there, or in the U.S. Public Health Service. The Public Health Service also has, and I'll just say too, there's a lot of pharmacists that are integrated as civilians in some of the public health service agencies. And I'll give you an example, like FDA and CDC, Food and Drug Administration, the Centers for Disease and Control, that there, and ASPR, the emergency response, and throughout Department of Health and Human Services, Indian Health Service, BOP. So they're integrated in there, civilians and commissioned officers. And if you find them, how you find them, you go to ASHP Midyear, because it's probably the largest meeting and there's booths all over, and you go to the exhibit hall and you'll see them there and you'll start meeting them. And having those connections and start meeting people and following up and visiting with them and learning more, they'll continue to introduce you to other people. That's how you do that. And also there's a lot of recruitment being done at the schools of pharmacy for students. If they are connected, I know, and I probably should refer to Kaylee because she knows about this for the Indian Health Service and for the Public Health Service, there's somebody that's tied or connected to the pharmacy school, and they're a point of contact to be able to get information from there. They're supposed to be with almost every school. And so they just need to find who that is and start learning a little bit more about it too. And anyway, there's an enormous amount of opportunity out there to get involved. And it takes patience. That's the other thing, is in persistence. It's not going to, things don't happen overnight. It's like you're in this for the marathon. So, and you stay with it and you learn this. It's something you learn, and it's a certain type of person. If you're patient enough and you stick with it and you don't give up and you're persistent, you'll get in. Would you agree with me? I'm asking, if I was looking at both Kaylee and Maggie, I would ask if you kind of agree on that.
I definitely agree.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Last question. And I'm going to pose this to Kaylee and Pam only. Do you have any final comments that you'd like to emphasize with our listeners based on your long careers in federal service?
This is Kaylee, Eric. Gosh, we have imparted, and I've gotten to hear so much from Pam and Maggie today. But I think in final conclusion, I think it's more to being both federal service as a pharmacist, it's no matter where you're going to work, it's what you're going to make out of it. you're going to get the experience you want to get out of something. The opportunities are there if you really are looking for those types of opportunities. And so I think back to what Pam said of, you know, reaching out to people. But the other part that I don't think we touched on quite as much, so I may just add these in at the very final comment, is really engaging in our associations. And I know it's an ASHP podcast, but really a plug for branching out and reaching out. Some of the greatest experiences, you know, in times of networking that I've had come from when I'm able to engage others, whether it's at a meeting, a conference. But those networking opportunities are so important because you learn, you meet new people. Sometimes we only know what we know, right? And you have to know, you have to continue to grow, like Pam had talked about. And so I think it's really important that you're engaging in things outside of just your agency, that you're looking at what the profession is doing across the spectrum, what other health professions are also doing. It's really important that you have that situational awareness outside of just kind of sometimes what maybe our own silo or our own, just where we're working at. And so I'll leave that one, that's a really important piece we hadn't imparted yet. And then as a final, just being a mentor and being a mentee, finding someone that you can be there for, you can support. And there's nothing better. I know Maggie mentioned that, of watching others take on those new roles and to advance. There really is nothing greater than watching someone that you have helped supported grow. And that's a huge reward in itself. So I'll leave us with that.
Thanks. And Pam, to bring us home.
Okay. I was going through and trying to think of anything I might have left out. And there's a couple things I wanted to, and I appreciate the opportunity here to mention. One was, you don't always have to be in charge. You don't have to be the director. You don't have to be the one in charge to lead. You can lead from almost anywhere. And what I always say is I have a whole career of leading from behind, leading from behind. So in other words, I was in the Indian Health Service. I was non-Indian. I wasn't going to be in one of the leadership roles, which was fine. I was good because I was leading from behind. That means I can influence. So influence is really the key. So things like, hey, have we ever considered this? Is this something that we would ever consider doing? And I can tell you, and Kaylee, this one's for you here, the mail-out program, implementing that nationwide. That was a big C plant at talking to the Indian Health Service headquarters, you know, the director and everybody. Have we ever thought of that? You know, and you learn how to lead, and it's just a seed plant. So those people that know me, anytime I do that, you know I'm doing it to you. Have you ever thought of that? So anyway, something I just thought I'd mention that. If you can get the leader or somebody else to pick that up, that's how you get something to grow. So anyway, I thought I'd mention that. There's a lot of projects I've done over the years that I helped behind the scenes with. I was leading it, but I really wasn't the leader. You know, pharmacy billing, that's another one, Kaylee, that just so you know, I never was the leader of it, but I was leading behind, but you don't know that. Another something else, and this came up when I was actually chief pharmacist officer. And this is actually why we got some of our women groups together and started meeting a little bit more, is that trying to get promoted and trying to get seen by leadership, you know, how do you do that? How come we aren't selected and how come we're not picked? And part of it was when we started digging into it, women, it was really easy for them to fall into doing what I call non-promotable work. And there's a book about it called The No Club. And non-promotable work is doing the things that need to be done for the organization, for your group, for whatever, but they're not going to get you promoted. You know, things like taking notes and I'm not saying that those aren't bad things to do. It's just that you don't want to be doing them forever. You know, doing them, you know, doing something operationally for a while, but don't doing it forever, not be the one to do that forever. So that's something to keep in mind. But my final point that I want to say, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this, is I am so excited. This generation of women that is coming up and women leaders, man, they're knocking it out of the park. And I just think you guys all rock.
Well, thank you, Pam, Kaylee, and Maggie, for making this real. I really enjoyed this conversation with you all today. Before we go, be sure to visit the ASHP Inclusion Center at www.ashp.org/DEI. This resource showcases our longstanding commitment to nurturing the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the pharmacy community and is a home for our vast collection of resources featuring real-world scenarios, best practices, and actionable steps pharmacists and others can use in their own practices to recognize and combat bias and disparities in care. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. And we wish you a happy Women's History Month. I am Eric Marika, and thank you for tuning in today.
Thank you for listening to ASHP Official, the voice of pharmacists advancing healthcare. Be sure to visit ashp.org/podcast to discover more great episodes, access show notes, and download the episode transcript. If you loved the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave a review. Join us next time on ASHP Official.